have with us Representative Steve Stivers of the Ohio 15th District. I want to give you just some quick background information on who he is. And as soon as I can get to it here. There it is.
I want you to turn that mic up there.
There we are.
We don't have any listening devices.
Shh, darn it.
All right. There we go.
I'll take yours.
For a minute, my braille wasn't popping up, and I'm thinking, oh, what am I going to do there? It's one of those moments when you can't turn to the guy next to you and say, can you read this? Raised in Ripley, Ohio, Steve Stivers learned from his mother and father the importance of family, hard work, and public service, which have been the values he's carried with him through his life. Whether as a student at The Ohio State University, soldier serving overseas, as a state senator, or as a member of Congress. Stivers is currently serving his first term as a member of Congress of the 15th Congressional District, which takes in the area where I live, as a matter of fact. So I was pleased that we were able to get him to come here. That district is made up of Madison and Union counties and parts of Franklin County. In the 112th Congress, Stivers has been tapped to serve on the Financial Services Committee, which oversees the banking, insurance, real estate, public, public and assisted housing, and securities industries. What a huge job these days. Members who serve on the committee also work on housing and consumer protection legislation and oversee Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, and the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Federal Reserve Bank is part of that too. Throughout his career, Congressman Stivers has led the way by improving programs and initiatives to encourage job creation and promote economic development. Prior to running for Congress, Representative Stivers served in the Ohio State Senate, and before that he worked in the private sector and for Bank One and the Ohio Company, as well as Bank One. And at that place he focused on promoting economic development and encouraging job creation as well. As an Ohio senator, this will be of some interest to some of us in here, Stivers sponsored legislation to end lawsuit abuse, to protect children and families, lower taxes for Ohio seniors, freeze skyrocketing college tuition prices, and to address the Medicaid buy-in to allow the people with disabilities to get back to work and improve Ohio's business climate. A career soldier, Stivers has served over 26 years in the Ohio Army National Guard and holds the rank of Lieutenant Colonel. He served the United States overseas during Operation Iraqi Freedom in Kuwait, Iraq, Qatar, and Djibouti, where he led some 400 soldiers and contractors, and is proud of that each one and every one of them returned home safely to the United States. He received the Bronze Star for his leadership throughout the deployment. Stivers received both his bachelor's degree and his MBA from The Ohio State University. You don't become a truer, more scarlet and gray Buckeye than that, I think. He resides in Columbus when he's not in Washington with his wife Karen and his daughter Sarah. Ladies and gentlemen, you please join me in welcoming Representative Steve Stivers.
Thanks, Nolan. Thanks for having me here today. And what I thought I'd talk a little bit about today is my impressions on my first year in Washington, some things I've worked on that might be of interest to you, and sort of how you can engage your members of Congress. I know that's something that a lot of people care about, and something that I hope more people will do, because our republic only works when citizens engage with their legislators and stay in touch with them and let them know what's important to them. So as many of you probably know, I represent Western Franklin County, all of Union County, and all of Madison County. I ran for Congress in 2008, and then I lost. So I ran again in 2010 and won. It was a kind of a long struggle to get there, and I'm not sure every day I feel like it was worth it, but it's there's a lot of big decisions in our country. And I'm happy to be there and honored to be there to represent all of you. And it's an interesting time in our country to be able to be there firsthand. I can tell you that, you know, I'm honored to be one of the new freshmen in Congress. There are 99 freshmen, Republicans and Democrats now. So almost out of 435 members of Congress, almost one out of every four is brand new. And I was a state senator before, so I've been a legislator. Some of these folks, a guy named Chris Gibson came right off of active duty in Iraq. He decided right after he retired in March of 2010, he was gonna run for Congress in New York. He moved home to upstate New York where he hadn't been for 20 years, ran for Congress and won. I couldn't have done that, I'll tell you, because it took every bit of the 25-year relationships I've had here in Columbus to in Central Ohio to be able to win a tough seat, but that was particularly impressive for something like that to happen from my perspective. But this is a really diverse group of folks. There are folks that, we have a guy named Bobby Schilling from the Quad Cities in Illinois, and he owns Giovanni's Pizza. And it's delicious, but he got elected to Congress. He'd never been in office before. So about 30% of the 100, about 30 of the new freshmen had never held elected office before. And that's, they do bring a fresh perspective. It is really interesting. And when I got there, I was like, oh, wow, it's going to be interesting to see how folks adapt and whether they can do this job. But I can tell you, I've been really impressed with each and every member of the freshman class. There's always an exception or two I won't talk about, but in general, I've been really impressed with the fact that they've hit the ground running, they've been there to represent the people who elected them, and they are very thoughtful in the way they approach things. It's not, you know, when you read the media and they talk about the freshman class, they talk about how mostly the Republican part of the freshman class, and the Republican part of the freshman class is pretty big. It's now 89 of the 99 members are in the Republican part of the freshman class. They'll talk about how a lot of them are Tea Party folks, and there are a few of them who are Tea Party folks, and they'll talk about how they are you know, not listening and that they don't want to work together. But I've found that, you know, probably 85 of those 89 really want to work together, trying to work together and do the right thing and move our country forward. And we face some pretty huge problems. Couple stats on our freshman class. We're the most diverse freshman class in American history. We have more minority representation than any freshman class in history, more Hispanics than any freshman class in history. I think actually there's been a class that had more African Americans, but we're close on that because we have more minorities overall. We have more women than any class except for one. And we're the youngest average age class in like 40 years. The youngest person in our freshman class is 30, And, but there are, let's see, of those, there, and I'm not in this number, unfortunately, there are 25 members who are 40 years and younger. So it's a young, diverse, interesting freshman class, and I've tried to reach out and meet each and every one of them, Republican and Democrat, and I have been just really impressed. And it's been a busy year this year. You know, we had several hurdles in front of us that were going to be tough, and some of them were contentious issues. I know that the pundits said that there was no way that we'd be able to keep the government open, no way we'd be able to raise the debt ceiling. Well, you know, both of those were ugly, I will tell you, and they went right up to the last minute. But we solved both of those things temporarily, and there's more to come. We've got to continue to work on it. You know, we've tried to work on issues like jobs, reducing spending, balancing or moving toward a balanced budget and the debt ceiling. And the two parties aren't agreeing on everything, and obviously you'll see that in the paper and the news and everything, and that is true. And the two parties come from a different perspective, and I think that's okay, and that's what our republic is all about, and we do need to figure out how to work together. And as I sit here, we have about 6 days before this group called the Super Committee has to bring some recommendations forward on deficit reduction going forward. And there's like 10 people in America that are optimistic, and I'm one of them, so I really think they will come together and get something done, because the problems are so enormous that they have to. We can't afford to kick this can down the road anymore. You know, it's happened for generations. I'm 46 years old, and our federal government has only balanced the budget during my lifetime 3 times. Mm-hmm. So really from, you know, essentially from 1955 until today, we balanced the budget 3 times, and that was in the 90s. And we can't continue to operate that way. And it's gonna mean we're both sides are gonna need to compromise. And so I am hopeful. I know that Speaker Boehner is getting personally engaged, and so is Leader Harry Reid from the Senate. And I hope that they can work something out in the next few days. Because, you know, the magnitude of the problems we face going forward are so big that we've got to work together. And I just strikes me that we've got to work on this together. In fact, I'm worried about if this committee doesn't come together, you know, something happens called sequester. Sequester will cut defense spending about 9.5% and domestic spending about 7.5%, and that's across the board. And the problem I have with that is that I feel like people sent all of us to Washington to make the tough calls, to decide what's working and what's not, and fund the things that are working, and slow down the things that aren't, and or defund the things that aren't if they're really, really bad. And if we take the easy way out and just let everything get cut across the board. I mean, is it a solution? Yes. Is it my preferred solution? Absolutely not. Because there are a lot of really good, solid programs that are working every day to help American families and to help move America forward. And those aren't the programs that should be cut. And frankly, you know, there are a lot of Republicans who would stand up here, and I've been a soldier for 26 years, there are a lot of Republicans who stand up here and say, we can't take any cuts to defense. We've got to take cuts to defense. You know, I've been in the military 26 years, and we cannot afford $692 billion is what we spent last year to defend our country and the world. And we still have based, I mean, I know the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq are contentious. I think President Obama has followed the right course to get us out of Iraq. But let's go back a little further. We're not out of Germany. We're not out of Japan. We're not out of Korea. We're not out of Italy. You know, let's look at our basing strategy that's based on the Cold War from World War II, too, and say, can we really afford that? Should we be paying over 50% of NATO's expenses? Yeah. I mean, I'm all for NATO. I think it's a good organization, but we can't afford to pay for the defense of the whole world, too. So we've got to really seriously look at our strategies, I think. and say to ourselves, what can we afford to do? So we've got a lot of work ahead of us. And I think, you know, the things are going to continue to be contentious. And I do want to tell the story about the two big issues we faced this year. You know, we faced the shutting down the government in March because there was only a budget through the first week of March. And then we faced the debt limit in what looked like it was going to be May or June and then got kicked to August by the Treasury Secretary. So in March, everybody said, well, there's no way they can avoid a government shutdown. And if you remember, the government shutdown was supposed to happen on Saturday. And we were in Friday night and voted to have an agreement to keep the government open. But we were there till like 2 o'clock Friday, or Saturday morning, really. And so we literally came down to the wire and kind of went over the wire a little bit on that one. But on the debt limit, we had until August 2nd. And, you know, I guess we learned our lesson. We fixed it on August 1st. So it still came down to the wire. On this super committee, we have until November 23rd is how long they've got to report something to us. And then the Congress has until basically Christmas to approve or, you know, deny what the super committee has. And it's only an up or down vote. We don't get to amend it. We just go up or down. And I know that the whole super committee thing has a lot of people worried. It has me worried, but I am proud to say that I'm glad that Rob Portman's on there. I think he's a very thoughtful, reasonable guy. And thank you. He's a good man, and he'll do a great job, I think. And the other couple guys that are on there that I know personally that I have a lot of faith in, they both happen to be from Michigan, so I can tell you that this week, but not next week.
Is a guy named Dave Camp.
He's chair of the Ways and Means Committee. And I think he's on that super committee for two reasons. Number one, we really need tax reform. You know, we have corporations like General Electric, who last year made $4 billion and paid zero tax. That's because our tax code is thousands and thousands of pages long, with all kinds of exemptions and exclusions. And if you have a platoon of accountants and lawyers, you can get out of taxes. Well, we need to make our tax code much more basic. I believe in the charitable deduction. I believe in mortgage interest deduction. But other than those on the personal side, I think we need to flatten things out a little bit on deductions, because it's what allows people that have a lot of money to get to pay a little lower tax. So I think we can make a much more fair tax system and get a little more revenue without raising rates necessarily. But I think we're all going to find some things in this report, if it's done right from the super committee, that we're going to not like very much. And we're going to have to say, well, you know, am I going to put philosophy above solving this problem, or am I going to go ahead and solve this problem? But we'll wait and see. I try not to comment until I know exactly what it's going to look like. But I was struck in the last two instances that we did ultimately meet our deadline, and we came together to work on things. I've tried ever since my state senate days to work in a bipartisan manner. Here in Ohio, I worked with Ray Miller on Medicaid buy-in that is included in my introduction. That, by the way, is very, very long, I noticed today, so I'll have to work on shortening my introduction. I'm working with Democrats on every single bill. I have about 15 bills somewhere in the process. I've already introduced about six. I have three more that we're ready to drop. And I have a Democrat co-sponsor in all of them but one. I think we got a co-sponsor on that one, a Democrat co-sponsor yesterday. I'm working hard to have not just one Democrat on each bill, but a bunch of Democrats on each bill, because my bills aren't particularly partisan. One of the guys I've really struck up a friendship with and worked a lot with is a guy named Hanson Clark out of Detroit. And we worked together on Homeland Security money. They were trying to concentrate all the Homeland Security money into the largest 10 cities in America. And you may know that the risk doesn't stop when you get to number 11. So in fact, we've had a lot of success here in Columbus on actually prosecuting folks that were trying to do really bad things that happened to be based here in Columbus. So
What we did is have an amendment that was put in the appropriations bill that says that the folks that make these decisions at the Department of Homeland Security will look at risk, and they'll say, okay, if the risk is there and there's a program that mitigates it, you know, where do we get the highest payoff? Not just what are the top 10 towns by population. That doesn't make a lot of sense. So that's something we worked on. We've also, he's a co-sponsor on of my six bills I've introduced. I think he's on four of them. I'm on three of his. So we've really struck up a really good friendship. And his district includes downtown Detroit, the whole 8 mile area in Detroit. And goes up and has some really affluent suburbs like Grosse Pointe. And then I've worked with Marcia Fudge. A lot of you probably know Marcia Fudge from Cleveland. Mm-hmm. She has been, we've worked together on a bill that will correct the Dodd-Frank bill a little bit, take a paragraph and tweak it a little bit, because there's some stuff in there that could result in companies moving a lot of their investments overseas, and that's not good for American jobs, and it's not good for American companies to just encourage them to take stuff overseas. So it helps make America competitive again in one paragraph out of a 2,300 page bill. So Marcia and I are working on that, and I feel good about how that's going to go, and I think we'll get that done. You know, the biggest problem we're facing today isn't, our debt's important, but the biggest job I think America's facing is jobs. We've got to get people back to work. And so one of the bills I just introduced this week that I want to talk to you about is a bill that will pay for roads and bridges and infrastructure that get people places, and it'll do it by expanding oil and natural gas drilling. We've got labor unions on board. We've got infrastructure companies on board. I think it makes a lot of sense, and it's a way to reduce the price of gas at the pump, put our people back to work, and rebuild our crumbling infrastructure. So I'm excited to be working on that. I want to talk to you about some things you guys might care about. I am a member of the Congressional Vision Caucus, and I've worked with them on a couple things. We're working on a couple things coming forward from the Congressional Vision Caucus that we'll be rolling out here not too long from now. And I've also worked on making sure that as we make these tough decisions on budgets, we look out for the things that make a lot of sense for all our lives. And I signed a letter to the chair of the Labor, Health, and Human Services Subcommittee on Appropriations that talked about the value of the National Institutes of Health and what they were doing to find cures, improve treatments, and make sure that we gain better understanding on diseases and treatments that impact millions of Americans and all our families. So as we go through these tough times, you know, I think it is important that we set priorities. And so that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about. I'm also a co-sponsor of a bill that called the Vets Dogs Act. You may know that right now there are some VA centers that prohibit service dogs from entering VA facilities, which makes absolutely no sense. So this bill would make sure that VA facilities allow service dogs and make sure that those facilities are open to people no matter who they are and what circumstance they find themselves in. And we have a lot of our veterans who have service dogs for one reason or another, and to not allow service dogs in VA facilities is maybe the craziest thing I've heard since I've been in Washington, and that says a lot. So the other thing I've done is I've worked to make my office and the Capitol much more welcoming and friendly and adaptive on tours. We have brochures that are large print and maps that are available in several formats, including large print, braille, and CD. And so if any of you are coming to Washington and your member of Congress doesn't have those formats, just stop by my office, 1007 Longworth, and we'll be happy to help you out. And we have some really experienced folks in my office who know a lot about Washington who will help show you around and make sure you get a chance to experience our nation's capital. And it is important that we make our government open and accessible to people regardless of you know, what impairments they might have. And so I'm really proud that we have Braille and large print maps and the CDs that are available for folks to make them more accessible. The last thing I want to talk about, and I know you're probably getting tired of hearing me, is how you can interact with a member of Congress to make a difference. And I think the most effective thing that you can do with your member of Congress is just somehow let them get to know who you are. So call them, call the office, whether it's the local office. You know, my local office is over at Hilliard, the number 777-4968. You can look it up in the phone book. Adam's giving me hand signals. I'm not sure what he's saying.
771.
Oh, did I say 777?
Yes.
Thank you. Nice work. Well, I just said the phone number wrong. It's 771-4968. A lot of phone numbers in Hilliard are 777. I must have gotten carried away. But, you know, or you can write us, you know, write us a letter, you know, drop us an email, whatever it takes. Call and set up a personal meeting. Get to know your member of Congress. Let them get to know you. Don't be, don't feel like you can't talk to staff. But obviously, if you can get a chance to make a relationship with your member of Congress, that's better than talking to staff. But talking to staff is really good because those folks get most of the work done. I'll tell you, you know, I have 7 staff members, and they work really, really hard, and they do a lot of work. Once a week, I sit down with the staff and we go through everybody each one of them has met with, and they talk about what the people said to them and what was important to them. So talking with staff is okay. The other thing you should do is reach out to the staff member specifically that covers issues you care about, whether it's, you know, tax issues, and I know there's some tax issues that you guys care a lot about. Whether it's healthcare issues, and I know there's obviously some healthcare issues that folks care a lot about, or other issues, find out who the staff member is that covers those and reach out to them too and make sure they know what's important to you, because we do listen a lot to what our staff have to say from talking to our constituents, and we always factor that in as we vote. So. Just so you guys know, my tax aide is Jesse Walls, and my healthcare aide is Kara Houck. So, and they both, Jesse grew up here in Coshocton, worked with me in the state senate, and Kara is from Batavia down in Claremont County. And so they both do a great job, and I hope you'll reach out to the staff members who deal with things. I can tell you some of the best ideas I've gotten for legislation, including Medicaid buy-in, came directly from constituents.
Right.
I met Melissa Day, who was Miss Wheelchair Ohio in 2004, when she came in to the State House, and I gave her a proclamation for being Miss Wheelchair Ohio. And after we talked a little bit, I found out she was in college, and I said, hey, would you like to come and work as my page? We have a position open as my page, and you know, it pays minimum wage, but it's a great chance to meet a lot of folks. And she said, well, I'm not allowed to work. And I said, well, what are you doing about that? She said, I'll lose my Medicaid. And I said, really? And then she told me the whole problem about Medicaid, and Medicaid was intended for people at the poverty line, and so the rules were written a certain way, and then they added in people with disabilities later. And unfortunately, before Medicaid buy-in, Medicaid forced people with disabilities to the poverty line. Mm-hmm. So that when your car broke down or you had a problem at home with your furnace, it becomes a huge life trauma. And so that makes no sense to me that we're gonna force people not to work. So what we worked on is, it was hardly innovative. 30 states have done it before Ohio. We said, as you make more money, you just pay a little more for your Medicaid, but you get to keep your Medicaid, because if you make people with disabilities choose between having health care or working, 9 times out of 10, they're going to say, well, I really need my health care, and I might not have a job going forward. So it's a system that works now. It's actually put 19,000 Ohioans back to work. I'm really proud of that. And it's built their self-sufficiency. They're allowed to save up to about $10,000. It makes a lot of sense, and
So, but that idea came from Melissa Day, and, you know, there've been people who kind of tried to work on it before, but I got Ray Miller, who's a African-American Democratic State Senator from Columbus, and we locked arms, and we said, you know what, no matter what, we're getting this done, and we did. That's one of the things in my public service career that I'm most proud of, so. Well, thank you for allowing me to be with you today, and, hope you have a productive, meeting today, and enjoy yourselves, and I would be remiss if I didn't say this before I leave you. Go Bucks.
Congressman, we are indeed grateful for your willingness to do this and to be part of our gathering back in February when our group came to Washington and met with your staff. I was fired up. I came out of there almost euphoric. I said, we have got to get this guy to speak at the convention. And a lot of our folks said, oh, he would never do that. We're a small group. He would come to this. I said, I know he probably won't, but we've got to try. We've just got to try. And so we began sending the emails back and forth as far back as March, I think. And we just kept at it and kept working. And you're right. Your staff not only works hard, but they are phenomenally polite and wonderfully professional. And as you approach Thanksgiving, one of the things I'm sure you have to be grateful for is a good group of folks like that that made this possible, helped this bring this about. Kind of a dream I harbored all summer, and when in June we got the sort of glimmer of hope that it could happen, I was just absolutely thrilled. So thank you for coming. We have just a little token of our appreciation for you. In this bag is a bag of ACB Ohio eye-opener blend coffee. And we have this roasted at Stony Creek Roasters, and there's also an ACB of Ohio mug here, so that, you know, you want to be able to drink it out of something. The bag, as you'll notice, has a little braille label on it, so that's always kind of a black magic thing. Thank you for coming.